Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Welcome you in to another episode of Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Canobio. It's the former world champion, Chris Algieri, the fighting collegian. Chris, fight season is upon us. I'm declaring this fight season. A slow 2 weeks gives way to a loaded 6 weeks. That's how I think. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. First of all, I don't think it was, that slow. But if we only have two slow weeks in the year, I'll take it. So we've had a great year. So last year we had about 8 slow months. Now, right. Boxing's looking good. Boxing season, I'm with it. I like it.
Yeah, we were doing Mythbusters episodes last year, talking about dipping your balls in ice. This past weekend, I was watching Razor Ruddock versus James Toney. Did you see the clip of that?
Oh, you watched that?
I didn't watch it. I saw a clip on Twitter, and I reposted it, and I felt disgusting reposting it. Yeah, exactly.
That's how I feel about that.
Chris is dying over here. Don't go dying on me now. We have a lot to get to. Fight season is here, and look at this run that we're on. Shakur De Los Santos this Thursday on ESPN. It's a great doubleheader. We'll get into that, too. Could say Sal as well. Benavidez, Andrade. We also have Chantel Cameron versus Katie Taylor, too. Ryan Garcia versus Oscar Duarte. Haney Prograis. Bam, Sonny Edwards. Inoue, Topalis. And then this heavyweight mega card in Saudi Arabia with Joshua Wilder, some of the bigger heavyweights on there, potentially Dimitri Bivol. So there's a lot happening in the next 6 weeks, right up until New Year's Eve, where they have their big card over in Japan, too. So there's a lot going on in the boxing world. I'm ready for fight season. Are you ready, Chris?
Hell yeah, I'm ready. You know I'm ready. Man, look at me. You know I'm ready.
Look like a guy that's ready.
About to get a haircut. I'd be extra ready.
Looks like you just got a haircut.
Nah, this is how it grows in.
Okay. Of all the fights on Fight Season, which one are you most looking forward to?
Oh, Boo Boo and Benavidez. By far. That's my number one. After that, listen, I love my man Bam. I think he's in a tough matchup. So that's a good one too. Whenever Inoue fights, I'm excited. I know our man Ronnie back there is excited. Whenever
Ronnie
Inoue
is here.
Fights,
I can't
the monster.
Wait to see.
I know you. I know you're psyched.
You're getting up 6 a.m. on the day after Christmas.
6 a.m.
I know you get up at 6 a.m. on Christmas still.
Yeah, I do.
Get your toys.
Yep. Because I'm that young.
December 26th, Inoue Topalis. Inoue going for undisputed again in one.
I love these holiday weekend fights. I'm not gonna lie. I feel like it's somewhat new. Like it doesn't happen that often. We're getting Saturday night after Thanksgiving, which is Benavidez Boo Boo, which is the fight that I think is the best one for the year. And then the day after Christmas, we've got Inoue fighting Topalis, which is an important fight and a potentially good fight. I mean, yeah, I like that, man. I'm going to be in my PJs, hopefully got my belly full of turkey watching Boo Boo and Benavidez go at it. And then Christmas Day, I'm going to be around all the presents I didn't get because
you're a bad man.
Ronnie, I'm an old bad man and there'll be a lot of coal around
Lots
me.
Lots of coal, huh?
Lots of coal.
And then also December 23rd, this mega card. Let's start here.
Quote-unquote mega card.
Mega card. December 23rd, Saudi Arabia is hell-bent on putting on another big fight card. This was supposed to be the Usyk-Fury fight, but they said, rest assured, we will still put on something big. And there were rumors trickling out, and there's still rumors trickling out as we speak. But over the weekend, we heard that Anthony Joshua will be part of this card. Deontay Wilder will be part of this card. Wow, they're actually going to fight each other finally for the first time. They've been talking since 2017. No, separate bouts. Joshua versus Otto Wallin. Deontay Wilder versus Joseph Parker. Fine fights if this was 2017. Fine fights if this was 2018. It's fine, but it's just another kind of slap in the face to boxing fans, Chris.
I mean, would these have been good fights a couple years? I don't think so. These are fights that nobody wants, but Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder are fighting. So I'm happy about that. Joseph Parker, listen, I like Joseph Parker. I like Otto Wallin. They're cool guys. They're tough. They belong in the mix with these guys, but I don't know. I don't think that those are really fights that are going to get people super excited. Having them both on the same card with the the thought in mind that they're going to face each other next, yeah, that's exciting. The, you know, but other than that, I mean, I don't know how exciting these matchups truly are now or ever have been.
Well, I would, optimistic Dan would say, like, yeah, this probably means they're going to fight each other. This is how they used to do it in the early 90s. They put, you know, yeah, stack these cards, Don King cards. They would put Holyfield, Tyson on a card or some other ones, and they would fight the next year. But not so sure about that with Wilder talking about MMA and Francis Ngannou in the mix and Joshua, and why haven't Wilder and Joshua fought yet? You know, how come they can't get the fight on this card? Why are they going to have to fight on separate fights on this one? I mean, Volyn coming off of the Fury win, the Fury loss, would have been a perfectly fine fight for Joshua. And Parker, 3-4 years ago, would have been perfectly fine for Wilder, too. It's just like fans are ready for Joshua Wilder now. It doesn't need any more marination. If anything, it's over-marinated. But this is a ridiculously stacked card in terms of names, like something we've never seen before, and only Saudi Arabia can pull off because they don't care about losses when it comes to finances. Dimitri Bivol versus Popeye Rivera from Star Boxing is the strangest fight ever. Like, what? Okay. What is that fight? Philip Hergovic, Daniel Dubois versus Jarrell Miller, Frank Sanchez versus Junior Fa. I mean, that's just as of today. This is like the full card, December 23rd. I don't hate it. I also don't love it. But it's just like, I think it's just kind of offensive to fight fans where we'll watch literally anything. But you know, just give us Joshua Wilder. Why are we doing, if you guys can agree to fight the same card and there's enough money for that, you can't figure out a way to get them all to fight each other?
Well, no, I'm sure they can. And this is, they're kind of slow playing it, and they're putting this massive. Listen, let's see if this happens. And we're talking like this is like a done deal. I mean, I don't know. I always say I'm always cautious about these kinds of cards. It's a lot of money. Like you said, these guys don't care about losses, but they also don't care that much about the sport. Actually, they don't care about the sport at all.
I'm actually more confident in Saudi making fights than anyone in the boxing right now.
That's a bad sign.
They have so much money to throw around.
Yeah, but they don't care about the sport, so they could literally, and like you said, they don't care about losses, so they can cut this whole card right before. Who cares? They don't care.
It's interesting. Another reason why it's interesting, Chris, is like there's like today Eddie Hearn was with Joshua with the Turkish, Saudi prince, and they were taking a photo op there. You have Warren is talking as if he's the lead promoter in this. You have Fury, but not Fury, not involved with this, but you also have Bob Arum involved with it. There's a lot of different promoters. Like, how's that all going to come together, too? I guess money can solve a lot of things, and you can make a lot of people happy, especially promoters who have the biggest egos in the world. But, like, who's the promoter of note here? It's just so many questions, and it's very odd.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully they pull it off, and hopefully this becomes a regular thing. We get these guys paid. And they make these fights. I mean, it'll be a fun card. I mean, I'm interested in every single one of those fights. As much as I don't love any of them, I'm curious to see all of them. I mean, Bivol, I'm happy that he's back. Ergovic is one of the best heavyweights around. I really want to see him in tussle with the top guys. Obviously, he's not in with one on this show, but listen, he's getting close to there. He's still early to the scene. But yeah, I mean, it's. I always want to see Deontay. I love Deontay Wilder. I love when he fights. I mean, the Bomb Squad, all of it. I love it. And Anthony Joshua, he's one of my favorite heavyweights. So I love watching him fight as well. So I'm not super psyched about any one particular matchup, but I'm curious and I'm looking forward to watching all those fights.
Happy for Otto if he gets this fight with Joshua. It's been kind of rumored to get that one for a long time. He's coming off that huge win of Agassiev. I think he can be tricky. I think he can give Joshua some issues. Joshua's still trying to find himself after all these years, and obviously wants the big fight, whether it's Ngannou, whether it's Wilder, whether it's Fury. You know, Volyn is tough. Like, Volyn, that's not an easy night for any fighter. And with Parker, too, he's just like a grizzled vet, obviously has some losses and took an absolute beating from the juggernaut. So his best days are behind him. But he can easily go in there and kind of dance around Wilder and win rounds if Wilder's not sharp. I mean, Wilder has fought one round in the last, like, 3 years. But it's interesting. You're right. Like, there's not one fight that I'm like, oh, I have to see it, but I'm like the sum of it, like the totality of this card and it being on December 23rd is kind of intriguing. And this is something that boxing fans are going to have to get used to now. Saudi Arabia is putting on these big fight cards. They're trying to be the capital of the boxing world. So you think
is that a Saturday or a Sunday?
23rd. Let me pull up my calendar here. Ronnie is on it. Super producer. December 23rd is a Saturday.
Okay.
Saturday afternoon.
So Christmas is on a Monday?
Christmas Eve, Saudi Arabia.
The
Joshua.
Eve of the Eve.
The Eve of the Eve. I think it's going to happen. I saw Joshua there today. We'll see. If it leads to Joshua Wilder, so be it. I'm not that convinced it does because of all the moving parts in the heavyweight division, but that's one of the bigger stories in boxing world right now. Another big story, Chris. IBF strips Terrence Crawford. Jerron Boutsenis elevated to full champ. This is boxing politics. This is boxing. Can't get out of its own way. The decision was rooted in the fact that Crawford couldn't fulfill his mandatory, which is Jerron Ennis, due to his contractual obligation to fight Spence in the rematch. So the IBF knew damn well that they couldn't order Spence versus Ennis because, Crawford versus Ennis because there's a Spence rematch, and it didn't matter. They still strip Terrence Crawford just 4 or 5 months after beating Errol Spence. What a joke.
This is bullshit on so many levels. I mean, in every way, this is bullshit. You got Jermall Charlo, who doesn't fight for 28 months, holds on to his belt. You got Tyson Fury fighting in basically other sports, holds on to his belt. Canelo's never been stripped of anything. He can do whatever he wants. He jump up in weight class, go back down, go in and out. Doesn't matter. Terrence Crawford is the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world. He hasn't had the belt for 6 months, and they're stripping him off of a proposed other fight. It's just greed, and it's stupid, and it's the fact that there's no one rule.
No rule.
Everyone has a different rule. That's the problem. Listen, actually, what they're doing is not wrong. The problem is that they don't do it to everyone. And if they're going to do it to the top guy, what are we doing?
Right.
What is this? It's a madhouse. Absolutely. I mean, it's clown court here. I don't understand what these guys. And actually, I do understand. It's all greed. All these governing bodies are a scourge on the sport. And this stuff just pisses me off. It really does.
It's like greed, incompetence, making rules up as you go along, all of the above.
But also they don't care. That's what really pisses me off. They do this stuff without caring because there's no repercussions. Nobody cares. No one's going to fight them. There's no one higher to come down on them. That's right. Why they do whatever they want. And it's disgusting. It hurts the sport.
Absolutely hurts the sport. The IBF doesn't acknowledge rematch clauses as an exception. The thing that really just proves your whole point there is Spence was the IBF champ for how long? Like 5, 6 years? How many mandatory defenses was he given over a six-year span? Terrence Crawford. I mean, excuse me, Errol Spence. One.
One.
Carlos Ocampo in 2018.
Yeah,
so they
fight that.
So obviously, Spence had a lot of injuries during that time, and the IBF president came out and said, "Oh, we probably should have stripped him, or we probably should have gave him another mandatory in there, but we didn't realize how long he was going to be out." So that's what I mean. That's like what you just said. That's like they play by their own rules. They make up the rules as they go along. Like the IBF has their own rules. The WBC lets their fighters get away with everything. Don't get me started on the WBA. They're the most blatantly corrupt organization of them all, and they have the WBO, which isn't. I mean, they all have their separate rules. It just doesn't look good for the sport. Like someone like Ronnie, who's just following along, knows that Terrence Crawford is the man right now, and you're gonna go and take a title away from him coming off of one of the biggest wins of the year and elevate a guy in Ennis. It doesn't make Ennis feel great either, because he's getting his belt via email, just like Haney did, and just like some of the other guys that got elevated to full champ. I'm sure Ennis played the game, and I'm sure he's not that excited to get his title this way. Like, he wanted to win it in the ring, like you did, Chris. He wants to win his title in the ring, not, hey, you just been elevated. Now you have to deal with everyone chirping at you. Like, you can't get a fight with Crawford, and now you have to get elevated from a technicality. It's ridiculous.
I didn't even get to talk about Ennis because I was so hot-headed about the governing bodies and what they're doing here with Crawford. But yeah, absolutely. I feel for the kid because, first of all, he deserves to be world champion, but he deserves a fight for a title. There should be no email champions. I don't know where the hell that came from. If you're an interim champion, you got to fight to then become elevated to full champion. This whole email champion thing is such horseshit.
That's another thing IBF doesn't believe in, Chris, not to cut you off. They don't do interim titles. Like, there should be two guys fighting for the interim title.
Okay, they don't believe in interim titles, but they believe in email champions. You just get a belt.
Yeah,
it's greed. It's so they can get a sanction fee on his next fight. That's all it is. That's all it is, and it's ridiculous because Ennis doesn't want to be a get his title this way. Like you said, he wants to fight, and it's pushing the fans to have this ire against him that he's going to have to deal with now, and that sucks as a fighter. He's going to have to deal with this, and he's going to have that monkey on his back of being like, I gotta fight somebody now. And, you know, these guys are on my back no matter what for months at a time while I'm training. I hate all of it. Stinks.
I don't think that you need a sanctioning body to tell you who's the best welterweight in the world.
No.
Terrence Crawford is the best welterweight. So if one positive you can gain from this is that take those sanctioning bodies, take those belts. I know they mean something in theory, but just chuck them. Because the best welterweight right now is Terrence Crawford. I think that that's just very clear. But you have to deal, as a boxing fan, you have to deal with a lot of crap. You have to deal with a lot of games played by these sanctioning bodies, the IBF, this week. After Fury-Nusyk fight, the same thing's going to happen there. They're going to strip, the IBF will strip the winner there and give it award to Hrgović. They already said they're going to do that too. So it's just out of control, man. It's so bad for the sport. It's so confusing. But I don't know what this means in terms of Crawford. I think it kind of tips his hand that potentially the Spence fight's going to happen sometime in early January, and it could be at 154. But it's just kind of Terrence Crawford is the undisputed champ, but he doesn't get a defensive. That's why undisputed too, something you've talked about too, Chris. It's like not all undisputed are created equal. You're undisputed for such a short amount of time. It's pretty much just like a little title to have after one win, and then all of a sudden these sanction bodies come out of the woodworks and either want your money or want you to fight these fights that just don't make sense for Crawford right now.
Yeah, I mean, I understand champions if they to win their titles and be like, all right, I'm the undisputed, like you said, everyone knows I'm the best in the world. I'm dropping every belt because I don't want to pay the sanctioning fees next fight. I don't want to pay that percentage off of each, and you have to pay each one of them. If you fight, you got all four 12%. Belts, you got to pay four sanctioning fees. You got to pay four sanctioning fees. That's insane. So, yeah. There's that. You mentioned a good point about this potentially tips their hand or their hat that we are going to see the Crawford Spence. Maybe the IBF knows something that we don't in terms of how far along or how close we are to actually having that fight happen. And obviously it's not going to happen at 47 because there's going to be no defense of that title.
Yeah.
So likely the fight will be at 54. Likely the fight is happening like we've all thought. But this could just kind of give us an idea that inside knowledge, that's what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. Good point there. So I guess one little thing to take from it, but it's just more nonsense in boxing for boxing fans to try to keep up with. But Anis is now the champ, and IBF champ at 147. He says he wants to fight Mario Barrios. I think a good fight for Anis would be the proposed fight between Thurman and Stanionis. It's good for Anis. Obviously, it gets him. He's a champ, and we talked about that's not the way he wanted to be a champ. But if he can get his career kind of moving a little bit, because man, it's one of the most mismanaged careers. It's one of the most frustrating things. But you know, get it moving at 147. If Spence and Crawford can move up to 154, let's get Anis in there with Stanionis. Let's get Anis in there, whatever's left of Thurman. Barrios is a decent fight. I expect Anis to win all those fights, and then figure it out from there. Who are the next guys at 147? Because I think Anis can rule that. I think he can become the next undisputed if he wants to. Because I think maybe this could leave a sour taste in his mouth. You know, becoming undisputed, I feel like it's the goal for every fighter. Or is it? I should ask you, Chris. Is it the goal, or just become a world champion?
Yeah, like you mentioned, the belts and like getting rid of the belts matter. They still matter. I got mine right up there. So belts still matter. I cherish my belt. I don't cherish the organizations, but I cherish winning my title, and I think every champion does. And also, it allows you to step into an elite class of fighter for history. You're allowed now into that fraternity of being a world champion. So having a belt, winning a world title, really does matter. Being undisputed is a whole different thing, and it's kind of a new thing, especially in the four belt era, and we're seeing much more of those happen. But listen, you know what we really care about? Being the baddest motherfucker on the planet. And if Ennis goes out there and he starts beating everybody up, which I think he will, I think he's going to rule 147 and he can collect all the belts. That's really what matters. Just like we said about Terrence Crawford. Yeah, he's getting stripped of the IBF title, but it doesn't matter. He's still the best fighter in the world. He's the best welterweight in the world by far. And most people have him as the best pound for pound fighter in the world as well. That matters more than anything. If you look into the tip top, that's what you want to be.
All right, let's move on to this weekend, or should I say this week, Thursday night. ESPN, regular ESPN over at T-Mobile, 10:30 Eastern. We're going to have a doubleheader brought to you by Top Rank with Shakur Stevenson and Edwin De Los Santos in the main event for Stevenson. It's his second fight at 135 pounds, Chris. It's a chance to become a three-division world champ in just a nine-fight span. For Stevenson, I mean, the kid's now 26 years old, which kind of took me by surprise. I thought he was a little bit younger. But he's coming into his physical prime. I feel like he's also coming into his mental prime. He's a minus 1,200 favorite. Do we expect Edwin De Los Santos to put up much of resistance, or is this going to be another Shakur Stevenson masterclass on Thursday night?
Well, I see it one of two ways. I see I could see places where Edwin could really be difficult and De Los Santos could really push Shakur to a place we've never seen him before and have to see him really dig down and show the true class that he has. But I could also see Shakur doing what he does and completely outclassing and schooling Edwin De Los Santos and winning a shutout. I don't see Shakur stopping him. I see it going to decision. I do think that De Los Santos is going to push him a little bit at times, but I don't think it's going to be a particularly close fight. I think Shakur, once he figures him out, he starts to control the puncher, making him miss, making him pay, touching that body. I think that he's going to show that he is the class and he's going to be that for a long time.
When you say push Shakur Stevenson, like, what are we saying there? Like outland him, you know, physically.
How about land some punches? Because the kid doesn't get hit.
How about this? At 133 professional rounds, Shakur Stevenson has been outlanded in terms of total punches only three times. Three rounds in 133 professional rounds. Round 7 against Joette Gonzalez, round 3 against Oscar Valdez, and round 1 against Conceição. He has not been outlanded in each of his last 17 rounds. Like, that's insane.
It's insane. But that's why we talk about him so highly. He not only does it, you know, subjectively as we're watching, he does it objectively on the numbers, like things like that. I mean, the kid is that good. But De Los Santos is a very dangerous guy. And I broke this down on Pro Box. We were talking about what De Los Santos does well, and he punches with you. The problem is that Shakur likes to control the position when he does decide to punch. He's not a big volume guy. He's not going to sit there and trade punches with you. And he picks his spots really well. He makes sure his opponent's off balance so he doesn't have an opportunity to counter. De Los Santos isn't so much a counter puncher, but he punches in the middle. He doesn't mind trading a shot to land because he believes in his power. But if you can do that with Shakur, you know, he's got a shot, but he's one of the most difficult guys to get into a dogfight with. And I don't foresee him doing that, but I do foresee De Los Santos because of his
rugged.
Because his ruggedness, but also his mentality. Have you been watching the clips that Top Rank has been putting out about the workouts? Dude, this guy's coming to fight. And he's not the kind of guy who's going to be beaten before he steps in the ring because he's fighting, oh, Shakur Stevenson, you can't hit the guy, he's this good. He's this virtuoso young fighter, but great champion. I don't see that in him. He's, you know, he's going to go out there. He's going to be rugged. He's going to be rough. He's there to win. I think it's going to be really tough to get him to tuck his tail and run like some other guys might. So that's where I think that the push is going to come from when it comes to De Los Santos.
Yeah, De Los Santos is an interesting fighter here and an interesting assignment because, you know, this was not supposed to be De Los Santos. This was supposed to be Lomachenko, and Lomachenko turned down the fight. This was supposed to be Frank Martin. Frank Martin famously turned down the fight. De Los Santos is the sixth-ranked fighter in the WBC right now, but he's the top-ranked guy for Stevenson by a process of what we just said there, fighters not wanting to take this fight. He had that win over Jose Venezuela where he just steamrolled him, right? It was a marginal upset September 2022. Then he boxed circles around Adorno in July. I remember betting on that fight.
That was impressive.
Right, and I was like, all right, this is a clear De Los Santos knockout. He's going to knock out Adorno. But then he goes in there and he's boxing. He's in and out. And I'm like, okay, who is Edwin De Los Santos at this moment? So is he a brawler? Or is he a boxer? And how are you going to use that against Stevenson? Because if he attacks Stevenson, if he is very aggressive like he was against Venezuela, he's going to get picked apart left and right because Stevenson's one of the most accurate punchers in boxing. If he stands on the outside, he's going to let Stevenson dictate the distance and Stevenson will pick him apart there. Is it like a hybrid? We haven't seen a way to disrupt Stevenson. He's only been outlanded three times at 133 rounds. Is De Los Santos going to use both of those performances, his last two performances, and try to box, I don't know, box or puncher? I don't even know how you attack Shakur Stevenson.
Well, therein lies the rub, man. That's what Shakur is so difficult to deal with because, listen, you're not going to outbox him. And De Los Santos has shown to be not only a boxer, he can box, he can brawl, he can punch, he can counterpunch, he's got good distance control, but you're not going to outbox Shakur Stevenson. And if you brawl with him, you're going to get picked apart. So how do you offset him? You got to get him out of his comfort zone. You've got to be able to touch him in places that he's not used to getting touched. Bang his shoulders, bang his hips, bang his elbows. I think De Los Santos hits hard enough that he could get some respect that way, being physical that way. Also, show zero respect. If Shakur hits you with something that you don't really, it doesn't not bothers you, walk right through that shit, keep throwing punches, punch with him. I think that's De Los Santos' best chance is to use his power to show a complete lack of respect for Shakur. And I mean, but De Los Santos has been hurt too.
He's been down.
Hurt. He's been down. He's been hurt. He's been down. So it's a very dangerous game to not show a guy like Shakur respect. I'm not saying Shakur is a puncher by any means, but he's not a bad puncher. He's physically strong enough. So he's got to be tough enough and willing to disrespect Shakur and his power, but also get through that fire in order to be physical, to punch wherever he can, and to try and punch with Shakur. Basically, just make him uncomfortable. Make him fight outside of what he does. Because when he's in control, that means he's got his opponent under control. And you ain't hitting nothing but air.
Yeah.
Shakur's in control.
You mentioned Shakur not being a big puncher, and he's got a modest knockout percentage. But the thing with him is he's so precise. You know, like in that Herring fight, it's when it really stuck out to me. Like, you know, he was landing at will. Also against
that was a whole different guy.
Right.
So they were sparring partners. He knew that Herring was a little shot. He knew he had nothing for him. I watched a fight the other day. He just walked him down and beat him up.
Right. But
that's not the way Shakur fights.
No, but my point being is like he doesn't have one punch power, but he'll accumulate and with range, and he'll accumulate with accuracy. 47%. Which is number two behind Tank Davis in all of boxing. That's Shakur Stevenson. My final stat, my favorite stat on Shakur, where is it? I have it right here. Stevenson enters the fight with a plus 20.3 plus minus rating. Only two fighters entered the ring with an above plus 20 plus minus rating, Floyd Mayweather and Vasily Lomachenko. So those are the type of company that Shakur has right now. I think it's a big moment for him. I think he has had a pretty tumultuous road to this fight. There was all the stuff with the Haney offer of 25%. He kind of got clowned for that. He's getting a lot of heat on social media from boxing fans. The Frank Martin stuff, the Lomachenko stuff. I think this is going to be a chance for Shakur once again to show who he is and make a statement and win a belt at 135. You know, win a belt at 135, become a three-division world champion at age 26, and set his sights on some really big fights at 135. This is the first step in the second chapter of Shakur Stevenson's career.
100%. I mean, this is a three-division world champion. You're entering an elite class of fighter. This is a historic moment for Shakur, and it's going to open the doors for the rest of his career. I talked about this guy. I talk about this all the time. I think he's a generational talent. I think we're going to see him at 140, 147, and some of his best fights are going to be in the 40s, I believe. The kid is that good. He's got the goods, both inside the ring and out. And this is just another step in his career. But I mean, every time this guy fights, I'm excited because I like what I'm watching. I know a lot of people, maybe casual fans or whatnot, they don't love the guy who is the not necessarily safety first, but defense first kind of guy. But listen, I love a technician, and the kid is super technical. His boxing IQ is through the roof. I like to see that. You got to be able to analyze. You got to be able to watch a guy like Shakur with a sharp eye, with a keen intellect, because you got to watch what's going on. Boxing is such a nuanced sport, and Shakur does it better than almost anybody in the world today. So all you fans who are watching on Thursday, make sure you're watching everything that young man's doing from his top of his head to the bottom of his feet. Things are going on. He's doing things on purpose.
I think the fans are a little more keen to that. I think they're a little more schooled to what Shakur does so well in there. I think Top Rank's doing a really good job. I think Shakur is doing a really good job of getting his name
out there. Our fans certainly are. If you tune into this show, you've got a very good keen boxing eye and ear. So I'm sure anybody who listens to this and watches Shakur knows what's going on.
Yeah.
They know what's up.
Yeah, I think Shakur's ready for the next step. He's ready for the bigger fights. I don't know what's going to come of this afterwards. Do I think he'll get Tank in the ring next year? Probably not. Haney, probably not either. But there are other good names out there. Other good names out there on this card in the co-main event. Emmanuel Navarrete taking on Robson Conceição. You know, Kensei Sal, this is his third title shot in his last five fights. I don't know how he keeps getting these title shots. But for Navarrete, you're talking about a guy from 2019 to 2020, made five defenses of his featherweight title. He slowed down a little bit, but he remains one of the most action-packed fighters that you can possibly put on television right now, fan-friendly. And I think in his last fight over Valdez is when he really cemented his status. He became a three-division world champion. He was looking for that signature win, Navarrete, and he got it over Valdez, and he was nearly flawless in that fight. I mean, Valdez could not get inside on Navarrete, and I thought he finally put everything together. I think Navarrete kind of got past that whole thing where it's like, all right, look at this guy. He fights like a madman. He throws punches from angles you wouldn't teach. Will it last? He can't make the weight. I think that all went out the window, and I think now he's entering like, all right, this guy's legit. Let's look at him as a serious fighter. Could he potentially go to 135 and take on Shakur? I'm interested in watching Navarrete in this co-main event.
Yeah, I've known about Navarrete in terms of being legit for a while now. I've called a bunch of his fights for Top Rank International. But yeah, I agree with you. With the Oscar Valdez win, it's a win over another Mexican champion. I think that really solidified his status with the Mexican fan base, which is gigantic, which is huge. And you talked about three-division world champion, entering that elite class. Every time he fights, everybody should tune in because it's fun. No matter what, it's fun. And Kensei Sal, talk about another technician. I mean, he is another super talented technical guy, really big for the weight class. He's tall, he's long, he boxes really well. He's got a huge amateur pedigree. This is an interesting fight. I like it. When I first heard about it, I was like, huh, never really thought about these guys in the ring together. And they have it's such a clash of styles that those always make for interesting thought processes for me. Cause I'm thinking about how are these guys going to match up physically, technically, strategically. So I think this fight may be a lot more interesting than people are giving it credit for, or really thinking about it. I think it's a good opener. I think it's another two named guys in the weight class. So I like the card. It's a good card, even on a Thursday.
Yeah, on Thursday, that's a great thing. It's going up against football, which is not great, and people are using that as a slight against Shakur. It's like, man, you're fighting on a Thursday. Tank fights on Saturdays, and so I'm like, what does it matter? Like, it's one like Saturday night. Now you can go out and do something because Thursday night you can watch boxing, but. That's a story for another day. I actually think Navarrete can get a stoppage here. I think Kensei Sal has been beat, obviously. He's got a couple losses. I think Navarrete, like I said, is coming into his own. He's going to throw a lot of punches, 72 per round to be exact. 80% of Navarrete's landed punches are power shots, does not care about the jab. I'm just wondering how Kensei Sal keeps getting these shots. You know, like I think a guy like Albert Bell, who's on the top rank roster, I think is way more deserving for this. But that's just like the WBO, and that's just kind of like Top Rank. It's like they keep kind of like recycling some of these guys. Third title shot in his last five fights for Kensei Sal. Like, I've seen him in the ring, and like, you're right, Chris. He is very talented. He is very skilled. There's no doubt about that. But I just know that he's not going to get into that second gear. I know he's not going to be able to hang with Navarrete from a power standpoint. Maybe he lasts to the 12th round, but I just don't see Kensei Sal getting his hand raised at the end of this fight.
Yeah, I mean, the power, the pressure, the pace that's set by Navarrete, it's breakneck speed, and he's all over you, and he's got such long arms, he can hit you and hurt you from far away. That lead uppercut he throws, the thing is silly. It comes from yesterday and hits guys on their chin, and it has power. They don't look like hard shots, and he generates a tremendous amount of power from awkward angles and weird places. And he throws a lot of punches, and he's very aggressive. So it's going to be curious to see how a technical guy like Kensei Sal can deal with him. But I agree with you. I don't see him really being able to contend with Navarrete, especially down the stretch. But either way, I mean, again, I want to see how these guys attack each other strategically to try and win.
You think Navarrete can get a knockout win? I think that would be the bet here. If I do a parlay, I have to do a parlay. I think I haven't done one in a while. I'm thinking that Navarrete wants to make another statement, wants to jump up to 135. We can talk about that quick before we get into the parlay. Like, Navarrete, do you think his style and his power can translate to 135? Because you look around at 130, and there's Hector Luis Garcia, there's Oshaki Foster, there's Joe Cordina. Good names, but those aren't, like, at the stage that Navarrete's in. The small window you have as a fighter to make the most dollars, the money fight for him is Shakur Stevenson. So do you think Navarrete can finally hop up to 135, and do you think he could be competitive with the likes of Shakur?
No.
Why is that?
Simple answer, no. I don't think so. It's good looking at his fourth weight class. Even at 30, he's starting to look human. At 22 and 26, I mean, he was just such a monster. But even at 30, I mean, he fought the who was it? Was it Wilson?
Liam Wilson.
Liam Wilson, yeah, hurt
rocked
him
with the left hook.
Dropped him.
27 seconds.
Hook. Yeah. And yeah, he looked human there. And I think
but
going
that's
kind
of like
class,
the beauty of Navarrete, though. It's like,
yeah, he didn't look human at 26. At 26 and 22, he was a freak. Yeah. And he was so strong and no one could hurt him. No one could do anything. He was beating guys up, blowing them out. Then at 30, he became human and the fights got competitive. They're fun. They're really fun. They're getting funner. I think at 35, I think is where he oversteps his bounds. Those guys at 35 are big.
But they're putting him on this card for a reason. Like I believe that they're, you know, it's getting harder and harder to find a dance partner for Stevenson. Navarrete is a fighter that pretty much all boxing fans know at this point. He's been flirting with going up to 135. He's had trouble making the weight, 130 or 126. You know, 135 seems like a natural spot for him. Not saying he's going to beat Stevenson by any means, but that would be a fun one. Stevenson versus Navarrete, you know, spring of 2024.
It's going to happen.
Right.
That's why they're setting this up. And Stevenson will get another name on his belt, under his belt and on his record. And he'll have a three division world champion, the guy to tune up. Tevin Farmer came out and said, like, Navarrete is easy work. He's slow. And yeah, I mean, that's a bold statement for Tevin, but he's not wrong. So you put him in with Shakur. Yeah, Shakur's going to see all those shots coming from a mile away. He's not going to get touched. It's just, yeah. And plus, Shakur's got the size advantage. But yeah, we're probably going to see that fight, and I don't see that being competitive at all.
All right, that's the fights this weekend. I got to put together my parlay. I kind of like Navarrete to win by – they don't have it up yet on DraftKings, but they will. Navarrete by stoppage. Stevenson is such a big favorite. He's minus 1,200. So I don't know, like over – like I don't see Stevenson stopping De Los Santos.
No, I think that goes the distance.
Like, do you think Stevenson, like, do you think he thinks about that? Do you think he's like, all right, I need, like, an exclamation point? Or is he kind of like Haney in a way where Haney will just win by any means necessary? Like, he doesn't care if it's not pretty. I feel like Stevenson could use a big knockout, but it might not just be in his DNA. Because I've heard you tell me that numerous times. You know, to be a finisher, it's got to be in your DNA.
Yeah, I think he's more, you mentioned Haney, I think he's more like Floyd in terms of the way that he goes about with his wins. You know, he can do it. He can take less. He takes less damage. I think Haney has to fight harder, even though he's more of a points guy and he doesn't care how he wins. I think he has to try a lot harder than a guy like Shakur does or a guy like Floyd did. So I think stylistically, I think Shakur likes to stay in his own pocket and he takes his say in the driver's seat. Like I always talk about control with him. He controls his opponent. He's able to disarm them, control them, put them where he wants them to be, waits till they're in a position where they're uncomfortable and can't really punch or respond, and then fire. He takes the risk out of a risky sport, similar to the way Floyd did. Haney fights pretty risky at times. And I think he has to, based on he's a different fighter than Shakur, different fighter than Floyd. His pace is higher. He's got to be faster. He's got to be quicker. He's got to use his speed more than just IQ. So I would liken him much more to Floyd than Haney, but no, I don't think he cares. Right. Win is a win is a win.
Win is a win is a win.
Move past it.
Right. I don't know if I'm comfortable having Haney, Shakur stoppage. You know, he had one in his last fight, but, you know, Yoshino is not De Los Santos. I think De Los Santos is going to be game. I think Navarrete is going to look great. Thursday night boxing, I'm all for it. Like, this is fun to me. It's something different. We'll watch. We'll react. Thursday night, we'll have a post-fight show. Chris, you won't be a part of it. I'm sorry, everybody out there. Chris, you have a busy week, man. You're a busy man. Tell us about your upcoming itinerary.
Yes, we got Pro Box coming up this week. So talk about having, like, off days fights, like Thursday night fight. We got Wednesday night fights in Pro Box every other week. Yeah. So I'm working Wednesday night fight. Then Thursday, I'm flying up to New York to go to Staten Island for the Teddy Atlas, Dr. Atlas Foundation annual dinner banquet. It's going to be myself and Paulie Malignaggi and a bunch of other great historic champions. Our boy George Jakovic is going to be with us as well.
Give Teddy my regards, okay?
I will. He is now a contributor on Pro Box TV, so I get to chat with him every week.
Nice.
And then Friday morning, I fly out to LA to help host the weigh-in for the Pacheco fight with our boy Justin Shackle. And then we're calling
John Boy Media's
on
own
Saturday. We're everywhere, dude.
All right, so Pro Box Wednesday, Teddy Atlas dinner Thursday.
Correct.
Saturday.
Matchroom, DAZN.
That's a Pacheco card.
Pacheco. And Pacheco is, he has been my favorite prospect for a while.
I don't know. Is he even a prospect now? He's kind of like.
Now he's a contender.
We need a word between prospect and contender.
That's why that was my caveat to what I was saying. Like, he was my favorite prospect for a while, but now he's really contender.
Rising star, says Ronnie.
Rising star is a very good namesake moniker for.
Do you have any tips for people that travel like that 3 days in a row? Like, what do you do for fitness? What do you do for food? Mental.
Gin on the flights is really helpful. Gin, orange juice in the mornings. Gin and ginger ale in the afternoons. No.
Just drink alcohol.
I would say if you can sleep on flights, that really helps.
I can't. You know what I do? Yeah. I do the old, like, I'll fall asleep for like a second. I'll just jump up and like scare everyone in my row.
That's I never want to trap with you, buddy. That sounds terrible.
I can't like go for more than, oh, no, I'm not going to finish that sentence.
So I
can't
I
last.
Off the plane, time to train. As soon as you land, wherever you are, hit the gym. Get a workout and get a sweat in. It resets you, gets you ready.
I take a nap.
Hit the gym first. Hit the gym, take a nap, go to dinner.
Yeah. Chris Algieri way. The lifestyle. Fighter's lifestyle.
Champion lifestyle.
That also sounds pretty good.
Ryan, you watch any Rocky?
No, I got to watch Rocky.
Rocky 3.
I got to watch Rocky, but the fights have been too good.
Fights have been too good. Rocky, you got to watch Rocky 3 because Rocky 4, we're having a little viewing here in the live stream lounge at John Boy. We're going to watch Rocky 4.
Yes.
Our accountant, Tony Capabianco, has an espresso machine at his desk. We're going to make espresso martinis after hours and watch Rocky 4.
I've never had an espresso martini.
Nobody's sleeping that night.
Those things will keep you.
They're good?
They're very good, but if you have more than two, you're on another planet.
I don't plan on having more than
that. Yeah, it's a weird. You get weirdly drunk.
It's basically a vodka Red Bull.
Yeah. It's like a classier vodka Red Bull.
I had a lot of those in Vegas.
I had a lot of those in my college days. All right, everyone. Hope you have a great week. Look for our post-fight reaction on Thursday night. Look for Chris all over the continental USA. We'll be back next week to break it all down and preview Andrade versus Benavidez on Thanksgiving weekend. Fight season has begun, and the best place to watch it all is right here on Inside Boxing Live. Protect yourself at all time. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs unless you got gin for Chris Algieri. Goodbye.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.